It's Friday, and it's time for Let's Eat with me, Chef Nick. Join us from 3 to 4 for an hour of food, drink, and a little information. Call in and have a chance to win a gift card. Call 769-9577. Thanks for tuning in to Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Hey, good afternoon, Northwest Indiana. Here we are again. Thanks for joining us on Let's Eat with me, Chef Nick, and Sharon Jackson. Sharon's sitting to the right of me. How you doing, Sharon?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Enjoying the day today?
Oh, yeah.
You probably haven't got out of these studios yet, though.
Not much.
Did you look out your little peek hole?
Yeah, you know, I did take a little time. The sun's shining. That's a good thing. You know, that's nice.
Well, enjoy it because I guess tomorrow and Sunday are going to be scorchers.
Oh, yeah, I heard.
Very, very, very hot.
I heard. It's going to be like 95 degrees.
Yeah. I want to welcome all the listeners out there for joining us on 89.1 FM. That's Lakeshore Public Radio. We're sitting here. The show today is Let's Eat with me, Chef Nick, and Sharon Jackson. And we have a special guest on that took some time out. Nash Bruce from Five Hands Farms is joining us. And we're going to talk about the farm business and some of the things he grows. And we need you, the listener, to call in 769-9577. That's 769-9577 for a chance to get a gift card from Chef Nick's Eatery out of Winfield. And ask some questions to Nash about the farming business. Sounds pretty good?
Sounds good.
Okay. So we got Nash here, Nash Bruce, which kind of throws me off. I told him this while we were sitting down that his name should sounds like it should be the other way around.
Yeah, it does, actually. It's kind of cool. You could start your own band. Yeah.
You know, my dad's Thomas Bruce, so he gets the same exact thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And we got Tom Maloney. He's kind of sneaking in here. And he's going to join the conversation because he's one of the customers of you, Nash. He buys from you at some of the markets. So, Nash, why don't we get a little bit of history about yourself? You're a young, scrappy-looking dude over here. And give us a little history about your personal history, and then we got to get into your family history, too.
Yeah, so basically straight out of high school, I hit the road.
Where'd you go to high school at?
I was homeschooled, actually.
Okay.
So, yeah, straight out of high school, I hit the road. With a rock band, and actually played guitar professionally for 6 years, and then during that time picked up a little bit of an audio engineering pedigree too. So I did some live sound here and there, traveled with some bands, worked a lot of odd jobs from cutting trees to being the custodian at my local library there in Lowell, and then getting involved in the specialty coffee industry as a barista.
Really?
And, yeah, just kind of jumping all over the place. Was a window washer for a while. And
like the kind that went up on skyscrapers?
Not on skyscrapers. Okay, I do not have that kind
of... The ones that kept their feet on the ground?
Right. Well, ladders, you know, dreams and stuff. But, yeah, so during all that time, you know, kept a plot at a community garden and... helped out with a CSA in Evanston, which is something we'll probably circle back on, CSA, Community Supported Agriculture. And, you know, through coffee, kind of got an interest in local food systems and traceability, you know, knowing where things come from and, you know, positive sourcing, that kind of thing, you know, direct trade.
So is this farm a family business that's been going on for a while, or is this something that you started?
Five Hands Farm is something that I started with my dad 5 years ago.
Really?
We are fourth generation farmers, at least.
Okay.
We've had the land for a long time, and it's kind of looped into a larger family farm.
So before you started the Five Hand Farm, and you said you were farmers for generation, how many generations has it been?
At least four.
At least four.
Direct, you know.
So that's like from the 1800s?
Yeah, yeah.
On the same property?
Not the property we're growing on. I think we acquired that in the 70s.
Okay.
But the larger family farm has been going for at least the late 1800s, yeah.
So was this this farm, is this like, before, you know, before, was it your family's livelihood? Or was it always just a, was
it
a hobby?
Oh, yeah, big time. Not, you know, not so much for my dad. He kind of jumped out of farming when I was maybe like kindergarten age. And he's done various jobs, driving a truck is what he's doing. But this kind of sort of came about as a chance for me to get off the road because, you know, for years and years I had spent time off and on traveling with bands, you know, and would move somewhere, maybe work for a while, maybe go out with bands. And it just was ready to put down roots somewhere, mm-hmm. I guess is what I'm driving at, you know, and kind of have a chance to give back a little to the community and just be more active in the place where I grew up. And dad to retire as well.
So your father's going to – he's retired.
Retiring into farming is our goal. Mm-hmm. It hasn't happened yet. But
so he can just do farming and nothing else so he doesn't have to have an outside job? Is that...
Right. He's working part-time right now.
Okay.
And I'm full-time or double-time or whatever you want to call it.
Well, like when I text you or I call you, you're out until dusk working on the,
right.
on the land.
I'm hitting between – 12 and 17 hours a day. So,
how many acres are you on?
We are growing on 2 acres.
Okay.
So it's pretty small, but pretty space intensive too. So, got 200 foot by 3 foot raised beds.
Okay.
So you cram a lot in there.
100
raised beds that are 200 feet long and 3 feet wide.
What do you mean by raised beds? I have a restaurant, so I get it at the end. I don't know what's going on before
exactly.
that.
Yeah, exactly. That probably bears explaining. so a raised bed is just essentially, a section of the ground that's elevated maybe 4 or 5 inches off.
Okay.
Off.
So you're not growing in like towers like they do the hydroponics and stuff like that where they grow in levels.
No, and it's not like, you know, some people might hear raised bed for their home garden and they think, like a garden box
mm-hmm.
that's, you know, maybe 2 feet off the ground filled mm-hmm. with soil. These are just, created with machines because we have to be able to raise them back up. And
so is it like a mound of dirt? Kind of thing?
It's like a 200 foot long mound of dirt.
Okay.
Okay. And what do you grow on that? It doesn't whatever.
Almost anything you can think of.
So how many different kind of types of crops do you have?
That's a good question. We grow everything, any kind of vegetable that grows here, except this year we didn't do okra. I mean, we have over 200 varieties. If
really?
That's a helpful.
That's a lot.
And where are you located again?
We're down southwest of Lowell.
Oh, nice.
Now, you don't have a farm stand at your farm.
There is not, and that is an important distinction to make because...
Because I drove there looking for the farm stand.
And you are not the only one. we've had a few people looking to come down and coming by. And it's pretty well all earmarked for our CSA members and for our... vendors, and then what we take to market as well.
So. And what's a CSA member?
So a CSA member is like Tom here, who's waving,
there.
But I don't think that translates over the...
Well, it's theater of the mind, really.
Well, yeah. You know what? Tom is the one that actually turned me on to what you do.
Excellent.
And so was the Provencio restaurant,
mm-hmm.
was another farm-to-table restaurant that kind of told me what was going
sure.
on. So, Tom, why don't you tell us... How do you, your experience with Five Hand Farms and how you got involved with them?
So my wife is actually the one, if she's listening, hi, Alexandria and Baby Owen, I've been off for the last
Yeah, congratulations.
Month. Thank you.
If you looked at him, Tom looks like he just had a baby, even though he didn't have the baby.
I didn't have the baby. My wife looks glowing, though, I must say, and she's the one that really got everything set up with Five Hand Farms. And for us, we really appreciate local, organically produced, seasonal varieties of fruits and vegetables. It's really easy in today's shopping market world, I think, to go in there in the middle of the winter and get strawberries. Strawberries don't grow in the middle of the winter. Mm-hmm. It's easy to go in the middle of the summer and get apples. Apples don't grow in the middle of the summer. You know, like, so we've become accustomed to eating foods that... are really out of season. And so
mm-hmm.
you kind of...
Oh, when I was a kid, you couldn't get a strawberry in the middle of winter.
Right, you
My
could.
Mother used to throw them in the purses in her purse at the buffet so we can have them later.
There you go. And it's just one of those things that we just...
Jamie, I didn't say
we
that.
Really appreciate that type of... I don't want to call it a dietary restriction, but that type of eating.
Uh-huh.
And so realizing that there's locally produced produce like that that's right down the road from us... And at the time, we were partners in another CSA that was no longer delivering to Lake County. And so for us, we were trying to figure out, okay, how are we going to get our weekly, monthly produce and make sure that we can go ahead and keep ourselves fed. She came across Five Hands Farms and their boxes, and it was really, I mean, basically a match made in heaven mm-hmm. in terms of what it is, you know, we're getting. And so we get the every other week one. And so I think it's really cool because, you know, some weeks we get eggplant, which, by the way, I hate eggplant, but I will say this. Nash and the folks at Five Hands Farms had probably the cutest little eggplants I think I've ever seen. Different varieties of tomatoes, just different types of squash, a lot of kale as well early on in the season, you know, and keeping it local. So for us, it made a lot of sense to go ahead and, you know, get this box of produce. Onions, by the way, your onions, absolutely phenomenal. The carrots, we made... made some really good chicken rice soup with those carrots we got in the box. And it's funny because he's talking about raised beds. We also have a raised bed in our backyard, and we had carrots come up just that week. We got more carrots from Nash, and I looked at my wife and I said, I guess I'm making a lot of soup.
Wow, well, so you can always chop them up and freeze them too.
Wrong, yep, can't go wrong with soup. So that's really where it began with us, and it's been great to be able to meet him, meet his wife. And they're like almost every weekend saying hey to him.
It's kind of cool, you know, meeting the people that grow your produce.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
Or do anything from the farm. I think it's one of the coolest.
The stocker at Jewel or Strax yeah. or Meijer or wherever you go grocery shopping, they're like you, Nick, or they're like us, where they're getting the food at sort of the end destination.
Exactly.
And, you know, people like Nash, they're the ones who are growing it, and they're the ones who are saying, yeah, this crop yield is really great. It's a new variety. Try it out. You know, you kind of... You
it's
get that human
cool.
interaction, yeah.
It's like you growing it almost. You know
without
I mean?
The work.
Without the work. Folks, 769-9577, 769-9577. We have $10 gift cards for Chef Nick's Eatery if you call in. And the reason you should be calling in, you should be asking Nash, how do you get some of this great produce? And I want to know, where can we get this? How do we sign up for it? What's the whole procedure?
Well, yeah, let's dig in for a second, just talk about CSA. So it's... Community-supported agriculture is the official term, and it's a program that a lot of farms about my size run, you know, small market farm or there's some farms that only do like a box membership.
Okay.
And one of the main benefits for us as farmers is we, you know, we receive the money up front at the beginning of the season. Often, you know, as we're planting things or making
so
our...
It's like a subscription.
It is a subscription, okay. Yeah, and it's paid up front, usually in the spring. And what that does for us is provide us with, you know, a stable operating budget for the beginning of the year. And then we provide the produce, and the produce is at a, you know, it's already of a higher quality, what you'd find in the grocery store.
Oh, but it's fresher.
Exactly, you know, mm-hmm. and picked at the peak of ripeness and, you know, everything else that, and didn't. For that matter, didn't travel, you know, mm-hmm. from Arizona.
Yeah, it's right. Green, green and ripening on a truck on the way here.
Right, exactly. Which, you know, we could talk about the positives of, you know, not burning all that gas to get here, or mm-hmm. also just the fact mm-hmm. that, you know, the sugars have fully developed and the flavor, you know, can't really be made. And the shelf life is a lot longer. But also just... For us, you know, having that those finances up at the beginning of the season, and we then provide those vegetables at a rate that's less than what we would sell at the market. You know, so I would say for the $35 or $25 to $35 you're spending on a box per week, you're probably getting closer to, you know, $45 or $50 value if
yeah.
we just sold you everything mm-hmm. at the market stand. So it, you know, it does kind of go both ways. It's not purely you're just, hey, you're at my mercy buying a box of vegetables, you get what you get. You know, there is some value there as well. And how you can get it. That was the initial question you asked. So this year we've actually been full up. We're feeding just shy of 50 families this year.
Good.
And we've been sold out since like the end of May, mm-hmm. I want to say.
So you're saying doing 50 families is about your max?
This year. That was yeah. what we decided to bite off.
Okay.
And
so you pre-plan your land for what you think you can sell
for out. That, and then we knew we were going to take on one market this year, and we had already made, you know, planned everything out with Provecho, mm-hmm. the restaurant we provide for in Crown Point. And then we also provide a lot of vegetables for our friends over at Locavore Farm, which is a small farm in Grant Park, Illinois, like mm-hmm. just over the yep. the state
they,
line.
They do
us.
A lot of really great farm-to-table stuff. We're actually going to be going there, my Excellent. Wife and I, in October to celebrate our anniversary. So we live and breathe what Nash does. So it's
so
great.
Nash, nice. It sounds like yeah. you need to get some really long white tables and put them right in your farm area and have a little shed that cooks food too.
Well, you know, you.
I know a chef. I know a guy.
that's actually what Locavore is kind of all about. Uh-huh. They're only, you know, 9-10 minutes away, and for us, we really love the production element of it. And I think we might, you know, in the not so distant future, get around to doing some farm dinners. I know we've really toyed around with putting in some brick ovens and doing like pizza nights.
Mm-hmm.
Have some guest chefs come in and throw down on some pizzas and try. And,
I mean, because your farm is
do that.
It's far, but it's really right off of 41.
Sure. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it when I drove down there, I'm like, whoa! It's, you know, way out there, but really, it's right in low, basically, but right off 41. It's really I liked it. I liked the drive.
Well,
I thought it was a nice drive.
To me how accessible we are. You know, if traffic's good, we can be downtown in Chicago and just over an hour. So,
yeah.
I mean, the accessibility is right there.
Yeah, you know, with 41.
394 actually loops.
Right.
Well, what it turns into loops right by us as well. So we have great accessibility depending on, you know, where people are coming from. But
so how do people know what to get? Do you have a huge – I mean, you said you have – how many different items you can have you offer?
200.
Well, we have 200 varieties growing. Not all of that makes it into the CSAs.
Uh-huh.
Some of those are specifically things we're growing for Provecho. Like, for example, this this week I just harvested our first crop of papalo.
Okay.
I may be butchering that pronunciation, but it's kind of colloquially known as wild cilantro.
Uh-huh.
Really pungent. Mm-hmm. I mean, gosh, my hands reeked for the rest of the day.
So you do some herbs and stuff,
you know.
Too.
Oh yeah, we do a lot of herbs.
You grow mint, oregano?
It's more along the lines of basil, a little bit of dill, some a lot of cilantro actually, and
mm-hmm.
and now poplo. parsley. You know, some of the more niche herbs, people, if they like them, they grow them themselves. And we've just found it's, you know, it's tricky to do full production. Like rosemary's a tricky one to do full production on. But, you know, if like somebody came to the market asking if we had dill last week, and I was like, we could do a special order for you, but I'm not going to bring dill to the market unless I have, you know, a bunch of people ask me for pickles because it just doesn't move.
So if somebody came up to you and said, hey, you know what? I want you to grow this and I will buy from you. Would you set a partial land out just to do that?
We do for our vendors, restaurants primarily. You know, there were a lot of things Chris from Provecho wanted specifically. You know, they do like gourmet Latin food. So there were some things he just couldn't source anywhere near here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're doing tomatillos for them. We're doing a full range of different kinds of peppers. You know, I wouldn't be growing Padron peppers if he didn't want them. Even though they're great, you know, I think we have like 18 varieties of peppers right now. And they're, you know, it's just a lot to kind of throw at people. And not all of our CSA people are hip to the spicy.
My wife being one of those individuals, not hip to the spicy. But so you talked about like these 200 varieties of different fruits and vegetables that you're growing. And for me, I'm a small backyard gardener. I got tomatoes, I got lettuce, I got basil, I got carrots, finally got my first zucchini, and some peppers. And that's about the range that I can handle. That's probably what I think a lot of people think about when they think about like home gardening or like, you know, a farm kind of garden. But what have been some of the trends in foods or different types of food that you've grown over the last 5 years now? Have you seen like an uptick in people like Chris from Provecho wanting some really obscure things or things that maybe you didn't ever think about growing in Indiana, but they work here now?
Well, I would say Chris may be the exception to the rule because he is kind of an adventurer.
Yeah.
And he wants anything that will, you know, kind of
set him apart.
Set him apart, exactly. Anything that is eye-catching or, you know, for that matter, taste bud catching. I don't think that's a term.
It's like called eye candy.
Palate catching.
Right, yeah, palate catching. Yeah, whatever. So, you know, and he knows some kind of obscure fun things that he can play around with, and he gets pretty excited about that. I have noticed for sure since we've started, people are way more knowledgeable and excited about things like microgreens or just the more exotic greens mixes, mm-hmm. Which we're about to have in full force again. Your frilled mustard, a mizuna, arugula, things like a wild salad mix, mm-hmm. more than just lettuce. Greens seem to be super popular. And a lot of people eating raw, a lot of people juicing, so kale.
You do any fruit?
Yeah, we're establishing some fruit. We just got plum trees, pear trees, tart cherry trees, blackberries, black raspberries, raspberries. Raspberries. It's tricky to grow blueberries where we are, mm-hmm. with the soils.
But this all fits on your 2 acres, or are you expanding on that acreage?
Well, the fruit we're actually putting in our yard, which is like another 5 acres. So we had somewhat of a small orchard established too. Mm-hmm. It's still kind of coming on.
How long does it take for a tree to give off fruit?
How many seasons? I want to say it's like 3 years.
Mm-hmm. 3 seasons.
So just getting things
three
established.
To five.
Yeah, sure.
I've looked into trying to do apple trees myself and mm-hmm. trying to get some blackberries and realized that it's an investment in that first couple of years just to even get them to the point where they can flower and bloom.
It would be worth it, though.
Yeah. What would make the tree successful? I hear putting them together, making sure fruit tree's not just out by itself. I mean,
well, yeah, there are some pollination requirements, which, you know, when you're ordering the trees, any good company has that information there. Like, you need to pair it with something in this family so that it actually blossoms and pollinates, makes apples. But, you know, good fertilizer. Fruit trees are one of the few things that we actually use like live animal manure on. Mm-hmm. I'm a little wary of bacterial contaminants, mm-hmm. so we just don't mess with that out in the field. But yeah, so you know, some horse manure.
Which they grow mushrooms on.
Yeah, sure.
In caves in France.
Right.
So has your farm gotten a lot more popular with the local food movement and the attention that's placed on that now?
I think so. I think it's been a good time for us to kind of get involved. At least in our area, you know, there's not a lot of people trying to do what we're doing. And there's some new startups, people just cutting their teeth, and they kind of look a lot like we did 5 years ago, you know, out there pushing a rototiller.
Since you're a fourth generation farmer, is that where you got your experience, just through life, or did you go to school?
I did not go to school for that. No, my dad has been a pretty avid gardener my entire life, and learned a lot from his mom, who kept a garden, you know, probably half an acre herself. At sometimes I can remember sitting on her porch snapping beans and shucking corn until the sun went down.
It's a good character builder, right?
Oh, yeah. Boy, somebody had similar parenting.
It's like a Norman Rockwell calendar.
Right. I just told my dad the other day, I was like, I always kind of begrudge that sentence, and it might be true. So
it probably is, yeah. It probably is.
But I actually developed really bad seasonal allergies when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't spend a ton of time out in the garden in some of the more crucial times, like in the spring and early summer. But I'd, you know, help him harvest a little bit or, you know, look for tomato worms and things like that. But it was one of those things that, you know, I'm just a really I love details. I love to just jump into something head first and just research and learn new things and systematize and all of that. So this was really something I could sink my teeth into. And so as far as like learning that and, you know, going to the fourth generation farmer thing, there are definitely some benefits from that. It's mostly dealing with things like, you know, I can ask my grandfather or my dad, you know, they know things like soil content and drainage and how much visibly how much organic matter should be in the soil, you know, meaning just chunks of things, you know, root mass and decomposing leaves and stalks from things, you know, what soil should look like and, you know, how to take a good soil test and, you know, when not to till, you know, I know some other guys who were starting out around the same time and they would go try and till wet ground and dad wouldn't have had any of that, you know, when mm-hmm. we were starting off. So there's definitely some advantages, you know, and some similarities between doing big grain farming and doing vegetables.
Folks, you're listening to Let's Eat with me, Chef Nick, Sharon Jackson, Tom Maloney in studio, and we have Nash Bruce from Five Hand Farms. And we're sitting here. Call in 769-9577, 769-9577. Get a $10 gift card from Chef Nick's Eatery. And ask Nash how to make some good soil so we can make some good vegetables. Corn. Indiana's all about corn. Do you do corn?
We do a little bit of sweet corn.
What makes it sweet? Do you throw sugar on it? What makes sweet corn sweet corn and feed corn feed corn? Or is it the same?
It is definitely not the same. I think it's really just selective breeding. I don't know.
So it's a whole different breed of kernel that you get?
Yeah, I mean they're bred for specific things, you know. I mean just like a, you know, a fresh beet is different from a beet that's bred for storage, you know. You're breeding for different characteristics, right? So, you know, sweet corn is
So do you have sweet corn on your list?
We have sweet corn.
Or is it too obvious and you just don't have?
It's pretty much exclusive for our members.
Okay.
There's like you said, we're in Indiana, right?
Right.
So, kind of everyone and their dog is selling sweet corn.
My dog loves corn. I just put the cob in front of him and he actually eats it. And I turn it and he eats the cob of corn.
I need to see a video of this next
year. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to get it for you because Taz loves sweet corn.
We'll get it on our Facebook page, Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1.
And you know, let me tell you another story about sweet corn. Now, let me ask you this. If you took that sweet corn and you bit into it raw, you husk it. First of all, what should you look for when you husk corn at the grocery store? You should look at it, no rotted spots.
Oh, yeah. You definitely don't want any brown spots or anything.
You don't want
like
the kernels all to be in place.
You want to look in and make sure it's all filled out,
so,
for one thing.
Let me ask you this.
That's important.
If you bit into it right then and there without boiling it or putting it on your grill, can you taste the sweetness?
Well, on mine you could. Yeah, there's sugar content.
You know why I say this? When I used to work about 15 years ago at a grocery store called Costas Foods out in Valparaiso, there was an older guy in the produce department, and he was shucking corn and biting it. And we had to stop him, and we asked him what he was doing, and he goes, because I was trying to pick out the sweetest corn. So we had to stop him.
Yeah.
And he was biting and putting it down. We had to get all the corn and throw away. How about soybeans? Do you do soybeans?
No, we don't do any soybeans. I mean, on the larger family farm, we do. Yeah, we're...
So when you say the larger family farm, is that where you produce for like the co-ops or anything like that? Do you do anything like that? You join into a co-op?
That I'm really not very involved with. We have tenants who rent from us, and they grow grain crops like corn and soybeans, you know, field corn and soybeans. Dad and I, we pretty much exclusively stick to the vegetables.
So all these tariffs and everything that's going on is not affecting you? Is it have nothing
no.
to do with you?
Well, I mean, it does in the wider sense, but, you know. We're pretty much set. The only you know things that come up in the news that affect us and usually for the better are you know bacterial contaminations. People hear that there's you know salmonella and romaine lettuce and everybody suddenly wants the locally grown
You're right.
romaine lettuce because they don't want to get it from the grocery store, you know. But yeah, I mean other than that we're in pretty good shape.
Now do you also deal with like crop rotations? Do you
that big time?
So
I don't know how you could growing organically and doing as many kinds of vegetables as we do if we didn't rotate.
So the average person out there, when you rotate, and they might have maybe backyard full of vegetables. When you rotate, are there like can you rotate corn onto any other part, or do you rotate in a certain way? Like corn goes to soy fields go to corn, and you know eggplants go to pumpkins or anything like that.
Well, what we try and do is keep things within the larger families in their own sections, mm-hmm. you know. So I wouldn't, for example, I wouldn't rotate cucumbers onto melons or melons onto squash, because those all three are in the same family. They're all cucurbits.
Okay.
You're all what?
Cucurbits.
What are cucurbits?
That's a family?
Cucurbit, yeah. Yeah, it's, like it's a family of vegetables. Oh. So it's, you know, melons, cucumbers, winter squash, summer squash, pumpkins. That's all, you know, one family with all pretty relative common pests and diseases, for that matter. Diseases or fungus or anything like that. They're pretty much all susceptible to the same thing. Nightshades are another great example. So
like the eggplants.
Eggplants, peppers, tomatoes, potatoes, you know, husk cherries and tomatillos as well. Can't leave those guys out. They're all nightshades, yeah. So so what we do is try and keep those in their own blocks and then rotate them. And we run, what is that, like a six-year rotation plan? So
every 6 years, or you rotate every year for 6 years until you get back to the start?
You know, so so nightshades won't be in the same spot until 6 years has elapsed.
Wow. Okay, so why six?
Well, just because that's how it
is. It the locust?
Okay.
Is the locust 7 years
we can,
or something?
We can kind of move one block down, move it over,
Okay.
So, I mean, I think four is about the minimum of what you'd want to do, but for us it just makes more sense to do that.
So for the home gardener like Tom, what do you tell them to do special about their soil? What can somebody do special to get their soil ready for like next
year? Lots and lots of compost. That's pretty much the best thing I can say. You know, it depends on whether you're dealing with an established garden or whether you're, you know, breaking brand new ground. And it really also probably depends on your soil content. You know, whether you're growing on clay or sand is going to be really different. If you feel, you know, particularly invested in your home garden, you can get a soil test.
Mm-hmm. And what would that tell you?
Well, most good soil test labs will tell you what you need to be adding to your to your stuff. And they have, you know, that you can select for conventional or organic if organic is something you're wanting to consider. And, you know, for example, if you're low in phosphorus, it'll bump down a list of recommended high phosphorus amendments that you can get on your soil. Although, if you you know, if you're not wanting to go that serious and send off your dirt to a lab, you know, maybe you're just like, I just have some seeds and have time to throw those in the ground. I don't really want to mess with it. You know, you can't go wrong with compost.
What should be in your compost? Any guidelines?
Vegetable matter. You can use wood ash. You can use. I try to keep a higher ratio of carbon than to nitrogen. And I would say, well, just no animal byproducts is a good rule of thought. No fats, no dairy, no.
Well, how about
meat?
Salmon? You always hear about throwing salmon in there. I used to run seafood departments, and people used to ask me to save. You know, when we fillet the salmon, to save the bones for them so they can use it in their garden.
Bones might be a different story.
Oh, that's okay.
But the
actual fat and the meat.
Yeah, exactly. The bones, I would want them picked pretty clean, you know, probably just about boiled before I'd want to put them.
I've read like things that can go rancid, you don't really want in there. We use, we'll use like leaves.
Right.
From trees that have fallen in the yard. We'll also use grass clippings. And actually, just a lot of the skin and stuff that gets peeled off from Nash's CSA boxes go right into our compost. And the turning thing, I think for me is the biggest issue. Like,
yeah, definitely.
Like, I know I'm probably supposed to turn my compost like once every like 3 days, kind of a thing, based on how our setup is. It maybe gets taken care of once a week. Over the last month, I think I did it like once. So we're going to be struggling with the compost.
Busy.
I've been a little busy, but we'll be struggling in the compost thing. So how does that work in terms of like caring for the compost? Because I feel like that's almost just as important as caring for the garden itself.
Well, the easy thing I'll tell you as far as keeping it turned, which is super important, almost as important as what you're putting in there, is you can get a perfectly functional. Oh my goodness. I need English. So you can get a perfectly functional compost thermometer, which is just like the probe on it is like 2 or 3 feet long, mm-hmm. And it, you know, just has a little you know, sight glass you can read on top, and you can get that for maybe $15 or $20 online, and it'll even, you know, like the one I have on the gauge says, you know, like pretty good, just right, too hot, you know.
Oh, so for the temperature.
Yeah. So if
I mean, you look, I never compost. I'm sorry.
What you're dealing, yeah, what you're dealing with in compost is once there's an ideal temperature you want to get it up to where things start cooking down and the like the microbial little critters are chewing it up, and their byproduct is basically dirt, and it if it gets too hot, that it'll kill those microbes.
I see.
So you want it to be, and it also, if it gets too hot, it also creates a lot more gas.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, you just don't want it to get too hot is basically it. I mean, it'll still work, but, and all you're doing is stirring it and mixing air in. It's also, I would say it's also important to layer your compost. So we keep a few bales of straw sitting next to it, or if you have lawn clippings. And if you have lawn clippings that you plan on using for your compost, I really try and discourage people from using anything that has seen any treatment.
Okay.
Just because if it has residual herbicide in it, you're going to have all kinds of problems putting that in your garden. So
we're getting to the end, you know, almost harvest season, right?
Well, we've been harvesting since May, and we'll go through October.
Okay, so in October, the people that have their gardens in the backyard, what should they do with the gardens to get it ready for next year?
There's a few things you can do. You can plant a cover crop, which is a big part of our routine, and that'll help, you know, keep the soil together. And
what's a cover crop? I mean,
a cover crop is a is a crop that's grown specifically to be tilled back in as just kind of a soil building crop.
Okay.
So it can either be something like tillage radishes that are grown to break like a hard pan that's developed on the like a foot deep or 10 inches deep under the soil. You know, it's maybe become compacted and the radishes help break that up. Or maybe you maybe the soil needs to be aerated, so you grow something like annual ryegrass that has like a huge mat of root mass that'll just get in there and really aerate it up and drop a lot of organic matter into the top layer. Or
well, how about the stems and all that, the plant itself that you just harvested? You just chop that up and let that go in there?
What we do, we use a special kind of mower called a flail mower, but any mower will do. I mean, a flail mower just drops all the residue straight down.
Like a mulcher.
It's a mat.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just little flails that spin around and just drop it. And that's why you call it a green manure, because it just, you know, you store all of the nutrients, you know, you fix your nitrogen is a term, you know, by not letting your nitrogen leach out of the soil. You know, the plant takes it up and then the plant's storing it. So when you mow it down, the plant decomposes and releases it back slowly into the ground. Another huge thing with cover cropping that anybody who might be listening that knows about would be loath if I neglected to mention is that it prevents your soil from eroding, which may not be a huge deal with your home garden, but for us growing on a large field with different elevations, you know, where water can run, it's very important to have your roots, you know, have plants in the ground for stability of the soil.
Folks, thanks for joining us here on Let's Eat with me, Chef Nick, Sharon Jackson, Tom Maloney, and Nash Bruce from Five Hands Farms. Please call in 769-9577. Ask a question about your gardening, how to get ready for next year or how to start next year. And I'm giving out gift cards to Chef Nick's Eatery, $10 gift card for calling in and asking us some questions. Tom, you have a question.
I do. So you grow all of this food, right? Who cooks? Is it you? Is it your wife?
Don't look at me.
Don't look at Nick. And are you growing right out of what you're picking up as well?
Yeah.
Or out of your
question.
Out of your yard?
We are growing. We are eating a lot of what we grow. Yes.
Yeah.
usually about all that we have time for, and this is something I tell a lot of people at market who ask me how we prepare things. We grill so much during the summer, you know, keep the kitchen from getting too hot. Mm-hmm. And
you're usually, outside.
Yeah, well, we kind of get like, you know, everybody gets like cave people where we just want food hot now.
Like Todd said, I think it's, I don't, for a better word, I think it's romantic that you're able to be outside, pick your produce, and then go over to your grill and cook it.
Oh, yeah.
I think that is the coolest
so
thing.
So you grill your sweet corn. You don't boil it then, right?
We do boil that.
Oh, okay.
We grill a lot of root veg, and we do also end up eating a lot of the lesser graded crops, you know. So
the things that look kind of funky.
Things might be cracked or ugly or split, you know.
You're eating those up to make sure they're not going to the CSA box or being sold at market, and people are like, oh, what's with that produce?
yeah, exactly. You know, there's a pretty negligible amount of those.
Well, Nash, we have a caller.
Wonderful.
We have Caleb from Valparaiso. Caleb, what's going on?
Hi. I heard you guys talking about compost and various different blends of it. I have a pepper garden that's really struggling this year. I don't know if it's different if it's like pH balance in the soil, or if it's, you know, if there's too much of certain chemicals in the soil from previous years. But my peppers, they haven't been getting as big as I'd like them to get, and as big as they have been in the past. So what's a good blend for like of compost for your average pepper garden, tomato garden, something like that?
Well, I mean, any compost is going to be beneficial for peppers. Peppers do tend to like a lot of phosphorus because phosphorus favors fruit set and blossoming. So if that's something you notice, that your fruit's undersized, then that's something to consider. If the plants themselves have kind of looked a little bit undersized or not quite as rich a green as maybe you'd hope for, then you're probably lacking a little nitrogen. But if you suspect pH, your pH balance is kind of what allows your plant to take any of those nutrients up. So that could also be a culprit. I would say maybe if you're up to it, get a soil test.
And so what would you add to make your pH better?
Well, pH is essentially acidity.
Okay.
So if you usually the problem is that you need to add like some calcium or some lime is generally the trick, but there's all kinds of potential online and as far as things that you can Google.
Caleb, do you grow a lot of your own stuff?
Actually, I exclusively grow my own peppers because I make my own hot sauce, and so I like people to know. I don't really have a huge customer base with most of my friends, but I like them to know that everything that's going into this hot sauce, I grew and I tended, and it's like a labor of love, you know. And I've gotten really good feedback on my hot sauce. But this year, it's looking like, I might only be able to make a couple of batches because I've already lost. I lost a ghost pepper plant, and I lost two jalapeno plants. So my garden is sort of sad.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, well, do you grow any of those peppers, ghost peppers, anything like that?
We don't have ghosts, but we do have Carolina Reapers and some Seven Pots if you're looking for real hot. And then we have habaneros, Indian Jualas, Serranos, you know, the...
I was going to say, I think we just got green little, was it jalapenos or...
Jalapenos, yeah.
Yeah, just the other day as well, which is... always great, and I think on that point as well, when it comes to that compost and keeping everything sort of, I think the hardest thing that I find when I'm growing, because I have peppers and I've got squash and I've got carrots and tomatoes all in one big giant 4x8 box as a raised bed, and so talking about like, well, this plant likes this thing and this plant likes that thing, and it's like I have all of them together. Does that work? Should I think about taking some of them out?
It works. I think, you know, a lot of times you can get a little bit carried away trying to tune your pH balance to one specific thing. I mean, if you're in the ballpark, you're going to be in pretty good shape. Most vegetables have a pretty standard thing. You know, tomatoes and peppers maybe could use a little extra shot of phosphorus as they're about to bloom.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something, you know, if you're in doing your own garden, you can apply your own fertilizer right there. Yeah. The other thing I'll add, you know, you talk about peppers and maybe having trouble with them, you know, without seeing our caller's starts. I'm not exactly sure what they might be, but I've noticed for us that if your starts aren't about perfect, you know, and if you don't really baby your pepper starts, you can run into problems there as well. You know, either they get a little leggy or just set back, you know, if maybe they have a colder ambient temperature in the greenhouse or in under your lamps than what they like, because they really like to keep it fairly dry and hot.
So did that help you out, Caleb?
It absolutely did. And I got to say, I went into Chef Nick's, I want to say it was last weekend, with a friend of mine, and he's from out of town, and he got the... what's the one with the onion rings?
The crybaby?
Yes, yes. Absolutely loved it. I believe I got a buffalo chicken sandwich of some sort.
Yeah, yeah. The wrap?
Yeah, absolutely killer. Well, absolutely killer.
Thank you very much. And you know what? We're going to be sending you out a gift card so you can come and visit us again. How's that sound?
That sounds fantastic.
Thanks for calling in. Folks, we got about 7 minutes. If you want to call in and ask Nash a question about farming, 769-9577. That's 769-9577. And we're giving out $10 gift cards to Chef Nick's Eatery for that question. Let me ask you this. Pumpkins. Do you do them pumpkins?
We do. And actually, I found my first nearly fully orange pumpkin out there today, which is way early.
Yeah.
I was like, come on, guy, we got to hang out till October.
Can I tell you my pumpkin story?
Go for it.
Okay. I tried growing pumpkins. Okay?
Is this safe for air, Nick?
Yes, it
okay,
is.
Thank you. Just had to make sure.
My kids are listening. So I tried growing pumpkins. Are they one of the harder things to grow?
Yeah, they can be tricky.
Okay. So I put it in. I tried 2 years in a row. The vine must have been 20 foot long.
Yeah.
It just kept growing. Took up my backyard. And all I yield was two pumpkins. So what did I do wrong?
That sounds about right if it's just one plant.
Really?
You don't get a ton of yield off of pumpkins.
So let's stay on this pumpkin train. I think my wife is also listening. And we've had discussions. We've got this, I want to say it's probably like 3 feet in front of our house. And it's, I think, probably 15 to 20 feet along the front. Of these, you know, think of like the bushes that are in front of houses that were really popular in like the 70s. Those mm-hmm. kind of like those like pine.
I wasn't
fir
born yet. I know
bushes. You know what I mean? They're all remnants of people's houses now.
Right.
And I want to just rip them up and I want to grow pumpkins. Is it a worthwhile endeavor to try to continue to? I don't want to say fight with, but it's a losing battle when it comes to that. Do I argue the point to try to grow them? Is it worth it for the sport, or is it one of those where the idea behind it is like, oh, it would be fun in theory, but you're better off just buying the pumpkin every year from the wherever to carve it or
make pie? Let me chime in
on
that, Tom. When your kid, your son, gets a little older,
yeah.
The coolest thing is to grow that plant and watch him go out there and watch that plant grow,
yeah.
And then pick it and then carve it.
See, there you go, Alexandra. If you're listening, we need to grow the big carving pumpkins. Now, do you do carving pumpkins? Do you do pumpkin pies?
We do a little mix of both pie pumpkins. The pie pumpkins are kind of in a minority. People are more excited about jack-o'-lanterns.
Yeah.
So that's generally what we grow more of.
Okay.
Do you do acorn squash? Do you do?
Oh yeah, we do. We do acorns, we do buttercups, delicatas, butternuts,
wow.
Spaghetti, and seems like there's one more, but maybe I'm not. We've done Hubbards, but they just are bug magnets.
Nick, so, I think you need to be a vendor for Five Hands Farms now.
Yeah. Do pumpkins, you know, you think of them, okay, they're nightshade, right? No,
they're cucurbits.
They're, yeah. Right. So you would think they would just grow under any condition, but they need a lot of sun, don't they? They got to be out in the open.
Most things like full sun.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean they like sun.
Okay. Because I thought I can just grow many, but it seems like when you give them more sun, But those vines would just like take up your whole yard. I mean, it's like something you see out of a horror movie. Like they, you know,
it's
they
like
look,
Jumanji in real life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, they're thorny, they're ugly looking, but then they give, you know, a nice little orange bloom, and then this little pumpkin comes out. But you only get a couple per plant. That's like
if you're. And listeners, this you should listen to as well. If you are shopping for pumpkins or winter squash, I highly recommend reading in some of the details on those seeds, especially if you're, you know, online shopping. Is a, there's great seed companies you can order from that will give you a lot of details. And if you look on there, they will have details on the vine habit. We grow a lot of compact vine habits, which only grow about 4 or 5 feet in either direction. Okay. Like only need, you know, a 6 foot span, you know, between plants. Some need as many as 12.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, for us, it's just not practical to take up that much room, you know, to grow something that is not super popular. But
Nashville, you know, believe it or not, this hour is like zip by. So tell the people where they can find you. The markets, your website, the whole bit.
You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Five Hands Farm, and we also are on the our just web address is fivehandsfarm.net, which is an important distinction. I think .com was a small sheep farm. Then we are also at the Crown Point Farmers Market from 8 o'clock until 1.
And that's Saturdays.
And that's right off the square, kind of by Great Harvest Bread Company, if anybody knows where that's
at. Oh, yeah.
So I'm just curious, how come your farm doesn't have a farm stand? Is there advantages to that, not having it?
You know, it's something we might explore later, but we are far enough out that I don't really know about how many people would be interested in that, and then keeping it stocked if we didn't do a lot of business would be tricky. And you know, I'm always out in the field, so I don't really know if it would be advantageous to hire someone to man it.
Do you have
and then
people,
liability is kind of an issue as well.
Do you
well,
have people helping you out there? Is it just you and your wife?
Me, well, my wife actually works full time for the Bradley Public Library. She's the youth services coordinator.
Okay.
Over in Illinois, and my dad works part-time, and then I have some help from my brothers as well. They both work well, one works full-time, one's a student. So
any future plans, something that
keep expanding,
just keep expanding
like a pumpkin vine,
some infrastructure improvements, you know, here in the fall. I think we're gonna put up a new pack shed, and then yeah, we'd like to maybe take on another market next year, maybe a couple more food vendors, and probably grow our CSA by 10 or 20 members.
And I do have one question for you. What is your favorite thing to grow?
To grow?
Yeah.
For ease of growing, I would say radishes.
Really?
Okay.
In and out. You know, 21 days, you got a crop. They're up in 2 days.
What's the hardest?
Ooh. Pumpkins are kind of tricky. Celery can be a real trick. Cauliflower, I'm not... Not particularly.
Can they order online from you?
If you order enough. Yeah. Like if you want canning tomatoes or beans to can or something like that, we can work some out.
Okay. Well, Nash, that's Nash Bruce from Five Hand Farms out of Lowe, Indiana. And he came in. Thanks for spending your time. I know you're busy. You're probably going to be out in the fields all day. I want to thank everyone out there for joining us on Let's Eat with me, Chef Nick, and Sharon Jackson, and Tom Maloney sat in. And I want to wish everyone a great weekend. Be safe out there. It's going to be hot. And next week we'll be here with Let's Eat with Three Monkeys. And we'll be here next Friday at 3 o'clock. So everyone have a great weekend, and enjoy your weekend, and ciao.